Let's welcome everyone tonight to this week's CCL training program, created to help all of our supporters around the world connect with each other and empower us to achieve our larger goals for climate advocacy. I want to thank you for taking the time to join us tonight. I'll be your host, Brett Cease. And this week's essential topic is going to be providing an En-ROADS update, especially on hosting climate simulations, whether it's online or in your community, using the wonderful tool that Climate Interactive has created. So we're going to be joined by CCL Michigan Liaisons Coordinator, Dr. Lisa Del Bueno, for a training that's going to review the background, details, and how to host a simulation event with Climate Interactive's Climate Policy Simulator, En-ROADS, built with MIT Sloan. This tool helps groups explore the power of a steadily rising price on carbon through policies like the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, as well as many other levers and strategies and policies to address climate change, highlighting complementary climate goals, including the impacts of changes in energy, land use, consumption, agriculture, other policies, you name it, we'll find out all about it tonight. And so what is going to take us through, I'll provide a brief overview in just a moment of a little bit more behind En-ROADS, and then I'll actually pass it to Dr. Del Bueno. Lisa is a recently retired diagnostic pathologist who has been volunteering with CCL since 2013. Lisa now serves as one of Michigan's state coordinators and co-leads our wonderful health action team. And she's also started a nonprofit called Michigan Clinicians for Climate Action. But let's jump into our learning goals. So if we've done our job well, we're going to have a chance to highlight the background and a little bit of the details behind really what's been vetted within Climate Interactive's research to create En-ROADS. We're going to have a chance to really actually model what an overview of what a presentation might look like for your target audience. And Lisa's going to be able to tweak that and really demonstrate what that might look like depending on your audience, giving you a couple of different options and suggestions, especially right now in light of our ongoing Senate action push. And we're also going to think through considerations and processes for how a CCL group or presenter can use the tool in their own public community. So let's learn from each other here, right? I think that's the key background. And we'll jump right in, right? So a little bit behind the scenes about Climate Interactive and En-ROADS. This may be a review for some of you, but for those that have shared, hey, I don't know anything about En-ROADS, I showed up tonight to learn, tell me. Here we go. Climate Interactive is a think tank that provides modeling for climate policies and tools that show what's needed to contain global warming well below 2 degrees, as well as climate goals on a global level. That's straight from their website. Climate Interactive believes that the best way to engage policymakers in supporting effective climate policy is not to give them the answers, but to give them the tools to find the answers themselves. And I think that's a key distinction and a guiding philosophy behind why En-ROADS was created. And when we've had Drew Jones, the co-founder and co-director of Climate Interactive, in prior trainings on CCUs, he shared that the motivation for their newest interactive tool, En-ROADS, was the realization best summed up by one of their team members, Professor John Sturman here, who writes or was quoted as saying, "Research shows that showing people research doesn't work. And so what can we do about that?" Well, in the face of that realization, Drew and the Climate Interactive team were inspired by the words of the well-known American architect and general outside-the-box thinker, Buckminster Fuller, who is known to have said, "If you want to teach people a new way of thinking, don't bother trying to teach them. Instead, give them a tool, the use of which will lead to new ways of thinking." And that is precisely what En-ROADS does. And you don't have to take our word for it. It's been used by key policymakers like former Secretary of State John Kerry, as well as John Holdren, one of the former White House scientists. Both of them have used prior iterations, again, a different tool called CROADS, but within that Climate Interactive family of these simulators, and also found great value within their own work as representatives of the US government and representing, especially right now, with the special envoy status that Secretary Kerry has with climate. Drew has also shared that this tool is being used on the Hill. And I know that some of you on the line tonight or listening in later have been a part of making that possible. This number is from a year and a half ago. So all of these are, I'm sure, boosted since then. But this tool has been used and modeled in front of almost, well, over a third of the actual delegation in the U.S. Senate, many staff members on the U.S. Senate side, House Democrats, House Republicans as well as former governor and current secretary Gina Raimondo of Rhode Island as well. And I'd also like to highlight that this is a worldwide phenomenon, just like Citizens Climate International and Education and Lobby are. So 85 countries have played and used the simulator around the world. Over 50,000 participants now are familiar with it. And your job tonight is helping to really build that awareness, should you be interested in really leveraging the power of the tool in your own community. And I'll just briefly speak to the external review done behind the tool's methodology. You can see a wonderful list of great researchers, professors, academics, as well as the external reviewers behind how this tool is designed and what assumptions really kind of to make the ultimate decision, the pathways that are modeled. They've done a lot of confidence building comparing to history and other future scenarios, done extreme condition testing. Definitely even just the presence of an external review leads to the transparency behind what they're really trying to achieve with this tool's development. The other thing to highlight with the tool's use is what is told from our research team. And, you know, again, the En-ROADS model is remarkably user-friendly. We're going to see that in just a little bit from what the work that Lisa is going to do. And CCL volunteers have effectively used it to expand their own understanding of all of these different levers of climate policy to disseminate that information to their communities. And the key things that the research staff in evaluating En-ROADS as a model, especially as it pertains to the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, are the following, these four important conclusions. Number one, it's a global model, right? So its results don't necessarily readily translate to only a specific country like the United States' climate policy impacts. Keep that in mind. And lastly, with any model, we know that reliability is greatest in that first 10 to 15 years out. So thank you for keeping those in mind. I just want to do one other quick little unit before passing it to Lisa. And this is also geared for our new learners. But if you haven't yet seen the control panel, I do recommend that you go to En-ROADS on your own time. And all of these different levers that Lisa is going to be manipulating tonight, right here on these different sliding bars, like the energy supply, coal, oil, natural gas, bioenergy, renewables, each of them is fully described as you hover over the tool, and you can learn about the assumptions baked into each of those areas as you explore and toggle between the up and the down of each of these different levers that En-ROADS features. So we've got the energy supply panel area, and then in the middle, we've got transport, buildings and industry, and growth. These are all different models that are assumptions about our transportation sector, our buildings and industry sector, and about overall growth projections, whether you're talking about human population or our economy. And then lastly, on this far right, this sector explores land use as well as carbon removal technologies, both ones that existed before the last century with afforestation, as well as some new technologies that are in use for direct air capture and other things that Lisa can get into in just a little bit. So that's a very quick overview, but I just wanted to provide context for those that may not have seen the panel beforehand, what really the levers are manipulating. And we'll first talk about in-person presentations. En-ROADS and Climate Interactive say it's really a good fit for any group size. I'd love to hear if you found there's a certain group size that's been best for you when you've made your presentations as an ambassador or a CCL volunteer. They also recommend ideally having one person be the process facilitator, who's really engaging the audience and eliciting their input and really explaining what is being seen on that interactive panel. And then another person is engaged in actually running the simulator and being the Wizard of Oz, pulling all of those buttons behind the curtain. So you can do both roles as one person. It's a little bit harder, but just know that if you have a tag team, that may even smooth things out a bit more. And as a presentation, you want to lead the group, Drew recommends, through a set of questions as the guide and their support and helping them think through what options might be available, right? And so some of the key questions you can ask in that workshop to engage your audience include, what actions to take would you take on climate that are your preferred solution? Or what would the impact of a policy like X or Y or the Energy Innovation Act be, for example, to really kind of dive into exploring each of these. One side note, we actually have on this training page a suggested set of dials or parameters to put in to fully accurately capture what the Energy Innovation Act would do as best depicted by this model. So I can put that in the chat. And for those listening in later, you can find that on the training page. And the other key thing that Lisa's going to show over and over in her presentation is returning to this. If we are to achieve the target of a well below 2 degrees Celsius goal or 1.5 degrees as our Paris Agreement really commits our global community to, what else is required to deliver on these goals? Keeping on returning back, iterating on, it's not just one lever, right? There's many parts of this solution that are all going to need to happen across the board for us to achieve that goal. So without further ado, though, Lisa, we are so looking forward to kind of hearing what you've been putting together after consulting with a lot of CCL, and the floor is yours.
Great. Thanks so much, Brett, and thanks to each of you guys for being here. And I just want to start right off. I have looked at almost all of the webinars, and I've played with it quite a bit, but I would never call myself an expert. What I have done, though, is at the request of others, I put together a very short En-ROADS presentation. So it's not like a workshop. This is more of a presentation. It was designed in a way that it was given very briefly to a conservative audience, a member of Congress. I've done it several times, allowed a little time of discussion, but really didn't have an opportunity for a lot of discussion. So it's being done in a slightly different way. So what I've done is I've actually put together two presentations, one that's more appropriate for a conservative audience and one that's more appropriate for a progressive audience. We videotaped both of them, thinking that it might be helpful to people to actually mail to your staffer and your members of Congress office. I plan to use it in sending it off to the some of the people I work with in climate and health who, in order to have a better understanding of the relative strength of different policies. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna start with my presentation that I put together for progressive offices because it's a little bit longer. And then we can briefly go through the one with conservative and we'll look at some of the things that I did differently. Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us tonight as we'll review the MIT's Global Climate Action Simulator. My name is Lisa Del Bono, and I am one of the Citizens Climate Lobby's state coordinators for Michigan, and I co-lead the CCL Health Action Team. You know, this is a really exciting time in Congress, and as someone who's been devoted to seeing meaningful climate action for quite some time, it brings me great hope that Congress is ready to take action. I hope that we will see them utilize all the tools in the toolbox, including a price on carbon. So what we'd like to do in the video today is review MIT's Global Climate Action Simulator. It is, in particular, a global simulator. I want to emphasize that it's not specific to the US. It's a macroeconomic model, a systems dynamic model, if you will, that is calibrated and tested against a whole suite of climate models. So it's a very reliable resource. When we read IPCC reports, intergovernmental panel reports, we know that they use three different scenarios, a high emission scenario, a middle of the road emission scenario, and a low emission scenario. So this modeling is actually using the middle of the road emission scenario. And even though it's not specific to the US, one can evaluate the relative effectiveness of the measures being simulated and how they work together to reduce emissions. So what I'd like to do actually is go to the actual website. I'm going to click right here and we're going to take a look at it so you get a sense of how it works. Now, there are many, many charts that one can evaluate, but we're going to focus on these two right here. On the left-hand side is our energy mix from 2000 to 2100. And on the right side is our net greenhouse gas emissions over that same period of time. This is our average global temperature by the end of the century. Given that middle of the road scenario. Now the experts tell us we need to keep that number under 1.5 degrees C if we wish to avoid tipping points and the worst effects of climate change. So let's look at these levers below and get a sense of what of some different measures that we can take. We've heard a lot about the Trillion Trees Act, so let's model afforestation, a type of carbon removal. We know that trees sequester carbon, so this is basically just planting new forests and restoring old forests, and let's say we do it over 100% of the available land. What would happen to our emissions then? Well, it will come down a little bit. It takes a while for them to come down because trees take a while to grow. And we can lower our average global temperature by 0.1 degrees. So this is a great thing to do. Everybody loves trees, but it won't by itself be enough to get us where we need to go. Similarly, if we look at electrifying our transportation system, we know that the electric motor is much more efficient than an internal combustion engine. So it makes a lot of sense to electrify our transportation system to create the infrastructure and put in policies that incentivize that change. So let's move that lever as far to the right as we can. We do see emissions come down only by 0.1 degrees C. Again, it's a good thing to do, but if you do that in isolation, it's not enough to get us to where we need to go. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to the PowerPoint. I've taken a series of screenshots that show a variety of different scenarios, and I think it'll just save us time. So right now, all of our levers are at zero, and we can model a variety of different things. So let's go over to the left-hand side and look at energy supply, and let's start by trying to phase out coal to the as great an extent as we can, move the lever over to the left. We do see emissions come down, and our average global temperature decreases by 0.2 degrees. Phasing out coal is a really good thing to do for human health. It cleans up the air. It's definitely one step in the right direction. Let's do more with our energy mix. Let's see what else we can do. Let's try phasing out all of our fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, and maximizing the use of our renewables. What happens then? Well, our emissions definitely come down, and our average global temperature has come down 0.6 degrees. This is really a great combination of things. This is obviously the first steps in transitioning to a low carbon economy. But some other things we might want to do is improve energy efficiency in our transportation and building sectors and electrifying. So when we are fueling those electric motors with renewables, it will certainly decrease emissions. So let's do that. What I want you to do is keep your eye on the left-hand side at our energy mix and see what happens as we improve energy efficiency and electrify. The amount of energy that we need comes down really substantially. So it's clear that this is really these are great efforts to institute. Our emissions have come down significantly. Our average global temperature is down to 2.4 degrees C. This is a great suite of climate initiatives. Now, the way I've modeled this, it's likely that every one of these levers would require a separate law or a separate regulatory policy. And we know how long it takes to institute laws and policies, and time is just not something that we have. So is there a single policy that would catalyze this transition to a low carbon economy and create and actually achieve similar results? And the answer is yes. If you were to put a price on carbon, like the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividends Act, you would actually reduce emissions an equivalent amount, and our average global temperature increase would get down to 2.4 degrees, just with instituting a carbon price like the Energy Innovation Act. So let's hit those three dots and figure out exactly how we modeled the Energy Innovation Act. What is it exactly? So we're looking at carbon pricing, and with the Energy Innovation Act, the price on carbon actually starts relatively low. It starts at $15 per ton of CO2 or CO2 equivalent. It's actually on the fossil fuel companies, it's not on individuals, and it's at its source when it comes out of the ground or into the country. And that's really important because then the impact will be economy-wide. The farther upstream it is, the broader the impact it will be. The price, again, starts low at $15 per ton, but then it goes up very predictably and transparently between $10 and $15 every year until essentially transition to the low carbon economy. That's the whole point in putting a price on carbon. This fee on carbon, as the Energy Innovation Act is set up, is just going to go up and up and up. Now, what about a clean electricity standard? Isn't that a single policy that would reduce emissions quickly? Well, we can model that. Notice how up here it's carbon pricing and energy standards. Well, we can actually model this clean electricity standard by moving the bar down and taking a look at that. So we've just moved the bar down and we're looking at 100% clean electricity standard. It starts in 2022 and achieves this goal by 2035. And what we see is that we do get significant emissions reduction and our average global temperature increases down to 3.2 degrees. So we're down 0.4 degrees C. So this is definitely also a good policy and effective policy. But you need to remember that in comparison to a carbon price that has an economy-wide effect, this is sector-specific and affects only the electricity sector. So that's about 27% of the U.S. emissions. Now what I'd like to do is look at a different policy simulator. It's the energy policy simulator, and it's specific to the United States. And in this modeling or in this chart, we've actually just looked at the electricity sector. We're looking at CO2 emissions and just of the electricity sector. And what would happen if we did nothing? That's a black. The gold is a carbon tax similar to the Energy Innovation Act. And the gray is models a 100% clean electricity standard that achieves this goal in 2035. So if we look at this a little more closely without the circles, what we see is that both policies would phase out coal. So that's a great thing. But the one that's a little more steep is carbon tax. And so the carbon tax will actually phase out coal a little bit more quickly than a clean electricity standard, and the area under the curve is less. And that translates directly into human lives saved and health improved. According to the Columbia Center on Global Energy Policy, by 2030, the Energy Innovation Act would decrease SOx and mercury by 95% and NOx or nitrous oxide by 75%. And these are the building blocks of air pollution. So it cleans up the air very, very quickly. And that translates into saving lives, improving health, and really saving hundreds of billions of US healthcare dollars every year. Now, the clean electricity standard, again, also does phase out coal, but it does a little bit less quickly. Where it's really helpful is near the end of this graph, around 2035, see how it has a pretty abrupt end and actually crosses under the gold line. And in this area, because it mandates that all fossil fuels are out by 2035, it could be more effective at driving out emissions from natural gas and might be used to address intermittency issues in the grid. The price may not get that very last little bit out of it quite as quickly. So it really is yes and, both policies are good. So if we were to model that going back to MIT, En-ROADS, if we were to model both of them, the Energy Innovation Act and the 100% clean electricity standard, we could get our emissions down to 2.3 degrees. Again, just the Energy Innovation Act was 2.4 degrees. But you know what? We got to get down to 1.5 degrees. So we still need to do more. And that's where that economy-wide carbon tax is so important. The Energy Innovation Act is so important because it decreases the demand of fossil fuels in all sectors of the economy, not just the electricity sector. And so it aligns financial incentives with other policies that we will still need. And I showed you earlier how important energy efficiency and electrification of the transportation and building sectors are. So now the price, if we put both the price on carbon and institute those other initiatives, we actually can get down to 2.1 degrees C average global temperature increase. And remember, without a price on carbon, we were only at 2.4 degrees. With 100% clean electricity standard, you'd be at 2.2 degrees. So the clean electricity standard and the price on carbon really amplify the effectiveness of energy efficiency and electrification. It's a solutions multiplier. Now, that economy-wide price would also then create an incentive on manufacturers or businesses to produce the same product or the same service with less fossil fuel energy. We know that fossil fuel companies are going to pass the cost down to manufacturers and businesses. They're all going to feel that same cost increase. And so the one who can produce that same product in a less energy intensive way will actually earn more profits. And people will, businesses will get creative and they'll innovate. And I'm sure there will be many new technologies that will be developed, but some of them may actually capture carbon, like biochar or some other mechanism. And we could reduce emissions down to 2.0 degrees C if we introduce a new technology like that. And then this is not directly related to Energy Innovation Act or carbon tax, but we can choose to eat less meat. We can improve our agricultural techniques. Regenerative agriculture tends to improve the quality of the soil. Good quality soil captures more carbon. We could reduce other greenhouse gas emissions. And now we're down to 1.6 average global temperature increase. And then we could restore our forests and plant new trees and green our living spaces and definitely get under that 1.5 degrees C global temperature increase. So we can do this, but it's going to require a comprehensive package of climate initiatives. It's really all the tools in the toolbox. I hope I've convinced you that a price on carbon is essential because it is clearly the single most effective lever to reduce emissions. And it has this economy-wide impact that results in creating an incentive to electrify our transportation and building sectors, improve energy efficiency, and spur innovation. It's really a solutions multiplier. It also cleans up the air, which translates into saving lives and improving health, particularly in frontline communities. So I'm really excited to see how you're going to put together this comprehensive package of climate initiatives. I hope it contains a price on carbon. It's what people want. It's what people need. It's important for human health. And thank you so much for your time and attention. Bye-bye. Hi, everybody. My name is Lisa Del Bono. I'm one of the co-coordinators for Michigan, and I co-lead the Health Action Team for Citizens Climate Lobby. I'm really glad that you're here today. You know, I listened to an interview of Representative Curtis the other day when he was talking about the Conservative Climate Caucus, and he mentioned how he wished he had some data that could inform his decisions about the best way to reduce emissions. And in thinking about that, I cannot think of a better way to do that than looking at MIT's Global Climate Action Simulator called En-ROADS. It's really a macroeconomic model, what they call a systems dynamic model, that has been extensively tested and calibrated against a whole suite of other climate models. So it's a very reliable. It uses middle of the road emission scenario, so not the highest and not the lowest, but a middle of the road projection on emissions. And even though it's not specific to the U.S., one can evaluate the relative effectiveness of the different measures being simulated and how they would work together to reduce emissions. That's a real beauty of this model. So what I would like to do first is actually go to the actual website. And, you know, it's a complicated website. It's an interesting website. There's a whole host of different graphs that we can look at, but we're going to focus on two. We're going to look at the energy mix from 2000 to 2100 and the net greenhouse gas emissions over that same period of time. We'll also look at this number on the far right, which tells us our average global temperature increase by the end of the century, 2100. It's at 6.5 degrees Fahrenheit if we do nothing at this point. But experts have told us that if we want to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, if we wish to avoid the tipping points We should try to keep that average global temperature under 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's what our goal is going to be, is to reduce emissions so that we can keep this temperature increase under 2.7 degrees. Down below is a whole host of things we can utilize to reduce emissions. So let's start digging and start looking at them. What if we were to plant trees in a fashion similar to maybe the Trillion Tree Act? Well, we can simulate that by looking at afforestation. You hit those three little dots and you see, well, what is it that they're talking about with afforestation? And what it is we would plant new forest and restore old forest over, say, 100% of the available land, not 1,000%, 100%. What would happen then? We know trees sequester carbon, certainly a good thing to do. I love trees. It'd be beautiful and good for the spirit and the mind, and it would reduce emissions. It would take a while for the trees to grow, and we would take our average global temperature and decrease it by 0.2 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's definitely a good measure, but it by itself is not going to get us down to the kinds of emissions reductions we need to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. So let's move our lever back to ground zero and take a look at another effort that we could try. We could try to improve our infrastructure and put policies in place that incentivizes electrifying our transportation system. We know that electric engines are much more energy efficient than the internal combustion engine. So it's really a logical thing to do. And what would happen if we were to do that? Well, our emissions would come down and our average global temperature would also come down by about 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, again, another good measure, but by itself, it's not going to be quite enough. So what we need to do, what I'm going to do now is go back to the PowerPoint. I've actually taken screenshots of different simulations. We'll just move through the whole thing a little bit more quickly if we do that. So what I want you to do now is to put your eye on the left-hand chart and take a look at the nuclear. It's this very light blue, barely visible line. This is the amount of nuclear in our mix right now. And what if we were to introduce policies that would incentivize building new nuclear plants? Let's move the lever to the right and see what happens. Well, we see that wedge definitely increases, so we're using more nuclear. And we see that our emissions again come down to about 6.4 degrees, so just down 0.1 degree Fahrenheit in terms of our average global temperature increase. So a good thing to do, but we need to do more. Let's really focus on this energy supply and do some other things to change up our energy mix. Let's put in measures that would disincentivize the use of fossil fuels, increase the incentive to use renewables and nuclear, and let's see what happens to our emissions. Now they have really come down and our average global temperature increase is down to 5.3 degrees Fahrenheit. So we're making some real progress. We need to do more. So what if we, at this point, increase our energy efficiency of our transportation and building sectors and electrify both of them? What happens then? Keep your eye on this left-hand chart and look at what happens. We can see that as we move these levers to the right, the amount of energy we need is just less. It's certainly a good thing to do. Our emissions come down and our average global temperature is down to 4.2 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, the way that we've looked at this so far is doing one lever at a time. And each one of these things would probably be a separate legislative or regulatory policy. And we know that it takes time to introduce legislation or regulations. So the question is there a single policy that would achieve similar results? And the answer is yes. We could actually put a price on carbon, like the Energy Innovation Act, and we would see equivalent emission reductions, and our average global temperature increase would be down to 4.3 degrees Fahrenheit, similar to all those individual measures. So let's take a look at what we're talking about when we're talking about a carbon price like the Energy Innovation Act. We would hit those three little dots and look at it more closely. Now, this is a market incentive for real change. And the way it works is this. We would put a price on green on the CO2 or CO2 equivalent produced by a fossil fuel product, and the fee would be administered to the fossil fuel companies. So at its source, when it comes out of the ground or into the country. And the fossil fuel companies would pay the fee and probably pass the fee down to the consumer. It would start relatively low at $15 per ton, and it would increase in a very predictable, transparent way by either $10 or $15 over time, creating a very, very clear price signal so businesses can prepare for this change, prepare for the cost being passed down, and innovate. So that they can, in fact, produce the same product or service using less fossil fuels, less carbon-intensive energy. And that's where the beauty of the market takes place. It's that market incentive to transition to a clean, to a non-carbon form of energy. What it also does is it puts the financial incentives to introduce other policies that would improve energy efficiency and electrification of our transportation and building sectors. And if we were to add those policies in, we would find that our average global temperature would actually come down to 3.8 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, when we had looked at this sector by sector without a price on carbon, our average global temperature increase was 4.3 degrees. So you can see that it's much more efficient. We have actually amplified the effectiveness of the energy efficiency and electrification by adding the price on carbon. The other thing that a price on carbon does is it allows for a rebate of the fee to businesses that can capture carbon and sequester it. So we can simulate that by moving this technology lever a little bit to the right under carbon removal. And it, doing that, we can get down to 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. So again, that rebating the fee support spurs more innovation towards carbon capture and sequestration. Then we can do additional initiatives which are not directly related to the price on carbon. We could improve our agricultural techniques. We know that more healthy soils capture carbon, so that would be a wonderful thing to do. We could reduce other greenhouse gas emissions. And doing those things in combination, we could get down to 3 degrees Fahrenheit by 2100. So we average global temperature. So we're coming very close to that 2.7 degree average global temperature increase that the scientists tell us we need to get under. So if we, at this point, restore our forests and plant our trees and green our living spaces, we actually could get under that 2.7 degrees average global temperature. So our take-home points are this. We can, in fact, stay under 2.7 degrees average global temperature, but it's going to take a comprehensive package of climate initiatives, and there's clearly no time to waste. I hope I've convinced you that a price on carbon is absolutely essential, because it is clear from looking at the MIT simulator that it is clearly the single most effective and inexpensive lever to reduce emissions. It's using market forces to create clear price signals that spurs innovation and acts as a solutions multiplier to incentivize electrifying our transportation and building sectors, improve energy efficiency, and spur innovation like carbon capture and sequestration. I hope you found this presentation helpful, and I am so appreciative of the work you're doing at looking at addressing climate change. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you so much, Lisa, for walking us through those powerful presentations back to back, tailor-made for custom audiences, and really highlighting a lot of the power of the tool in its comparative analysis. I'm going to transition us to talking about next steps and some really important opportunities that for those that really want to get trained up more in En-ROADS. But the big thing I wanted to start with acknowledging is that this type or application of using the tool is different than how many of the simulations are run and conducted, especially as En-ROADS trains, you as the facilitator are the coach and you are leading your audience, your group of attendees through this activity to envision a future world and really ask and engage them, what do you think it would take to lower to meet these global goals? And so we are aware of this being a slightly different variation on it. And one of the reasons why we wanted to highlight it right now is specifically because during our Take Action Senate campaign, this opportunity to really have a more focused and directed bite-sized overview of the comparative policy tools is a really powerful way to tell the story and highlight the importance of including a price on carbon in whatever emerges from the Senate's budget reconciliation package. So again, this ties directly to our current focus as CCLers and really trying to advance the importance of including a price on carbon in whatever ambitious climate policies are being discussed as part of the Senate reconciliation package right now. So what I'd like us to do is think through if this is, you know, catching your fancy and really exciting you as a new angle in to having dialogue with your congressional office, with local grass tops leaders, with community groups that you'd like to have more of a chance to learn from each other with, what's your outreach plan? Who are your target priorities for your group? Are they similar to what you're already doing with grass tops engagement? Is there any way that your ongoing work with meeting with your member of Congress and their staff can be benefited from using this tool in highlighting the comparative analysis that Lisa has shown? As you think through that outreach plan, think through how you can conduct your outreach emails, including making sure that they're brief, providing your background, an invitation to having a discussion, really sussing out, are they more interested in having an interactive experience? Are they more interested in having you present, similar to what Lisa has done here and really overviewing a lot of the tools and the already predictive impacts of them? And just establishing with your local team, what are your goals for using the tool in your own outreach? And what we'd love to highlight here is also some of the top insights delivered with En-ROADS overall. We know that there is no silver bullet. We've seen here with some of what Lisa's highlighted, some actions are more lower leveraged than what we may expect. Others may have higher leverage, right? And regardless, we find that there are many actions across many sectors that are required for multi-solving, or like Drew Jones likes to highlight, silver buckshot. The other key insight delivered is that we can do this. Achieving climate success and avoiding the worst case future is still possible. And one thing that I know that climate ambassador for En-ROADS, Ron Riley, one of our fearless Hawaii leaders, likes highlighting in his workshops is inviting the audience to envision what that moment will feel like, what it will feel like when we achieve our collective goal, and really slowing down and allowing the audience to really experience that relief, that feeling, that powerful moment, so that it is an emotional experience as well. We know that with multi-solving, there are abundant near-term co-benefits, as well as the averted climate impacts that we are all working towards cutting off as well. And I think that's key in highlighting. So I know we're getting close to the top of the hour here. So I'd love to just highlight one invitation, and that is that the En-ROADS training course and the links will be provided in the speaker notes and the liner notes for tonight's training. The Mastering En-ROADS training is being updated right now. And so they're actually starting a new initiative just this month where you can complete each of the 8-week modules at your own pace. And they include new online games and a Q&A session and workshops and practice activities. You can register for free. And so again, this is a wonderful overview of that website where you'll learn to identify and facilitate the En-ROADS experience, how it works, figuring out if the course is for you. Here's a quick view of what those course contents week by week look like all down the road. Currently, you can see they're still wrapping up the final couple of sessions, and they have a wonderful FAQ section at the bottom too. So I really would encourage you to go to learn.climateinteractive.org if you're interested in signing up for the course and taking your own experience of the Mastering En-ROADS training. And if you're also interested after taking that training and becoming one of the En-ROADS ambassadors, I know that we have several CCL leaders across the country that have taken the time and are acknowledged on En-ROADS or Climate Interactive's page for ambassadors. This is a wonderful way that you can also up your leadership and really be able to benefit others from your En-ROADS mastery. Here's a great overview of some of those En-ROADS climate ambassadors and their experiences and quotes as well, all throughout the world. And I'll also just close by saying, if and when you host an En-ROADS event, Climate Interactive would love for you to actually, just like we file our action reports, really register that event so that they can know that you've done it and they can keep track on their metrics and learn from your experience as well as hear feedback about what they like, what you liked found useful about that event. So with that, we are so grateful for all of you making it tonight. We hope that you found tonight's training useful, empowering, and educational in your own outreach. Please feel free to use these sample presentations to develop your own or to use in your own outreach. And feel free, again, as highlighted on this slide, to visit En-ROADS.org or Climate Interactive to find out more about the simulation and the workshops allowed, the simulation and the workshops available, as well as contact information if you have specific questions on En-ROADS. You're also very encouraged to share your experiences on CCL Communities forums. We'd love to know how you've used this simulation in your outreach, and really would love to have that collective feedback. So with that, thank you all for joining us tonight. Stay safe out there and have a wonderful time hosting En-ROADS workshops in your own communities. We look forward to hearing all about it. Thank you, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Thanks so much.
Good night. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lisa. Yeah.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.